Welcome to Look Ahead Radio and Viewpoints Around the World. My name is Tom Arms, and in a moment I'll be joined by my old friend Lockwood Phillips. This week we're talking about Trump's State of the Union Address. It became a bit heated over the radio. We're also talking about other things such as nepotism in Argentina, abortion in Europe, and the Eurozone, how it's hitting a new high. I hope you enjoy listening. Thank you very much.
Welcome to Look Ahead Radio with Tom Arms and Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world. This evening program, of course, has been pre-recorded to accommodate the sleeping arrangement for our foreign editor, that being Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio, joining us from London this evening. And Tom, good evening to you. And as we prepare to get into the, well, shall we say, the heated environment of Washington, D.C., before we even go there, what's the weather like there in your burg of London?
Well, it's a bit cold, but you know, I can detect the first signs of spring.
Coming from Washington, D.C.
It's really nice. It's cold and wet still, but it's just something in the air. That you seem to think that the days are getting longer. And you know, pretty soon you see the first flowers, the daffodils and the crocuses and things like that.
Okay, so you're already preparing for spring. We still have a few months of winter here in the States. All right, Tom, first question right out of the gate. Let's talk about the State of the Union address last evening. First question, and I haven't even asked you this in advance of the interview this afternoon or this evening. Did you watch the State of the Union? And if you did, was it streamed to you or did you watch it on television? Was it broadcast in their in the entirety there on the networks in the UK? So first question, did you watch it or what's the news?
It was streamed. I did watch a recording of it because it was on at 2 o'clock in the morning here. And as you said earlier, I do need my beauty sleep. So I woke up early and the first thing I did was, ah, Trump. Oh, no. There he is.
And I know this is probably a little premature, but have you seen any of the reports associated with it? Any observations?
I've seen the American reports, and I've listened very carefully to some of the radio reports. The newspapers obviously have not had a time to comment on it. Reuters did have a comment on it, which I thought was very interesting. I think you have to look at two things here. Or when you're discussing it, I think you want to look at the Davos speech he gave as well, and the reception there, and the State of the Union speech. You know, they came within a few days, and I think you have to look at these things holistically. Looking at them both holistically, I would say that he has made a generally positive impact. A lot of people will say a little bit too late.
Well, I'm intrigued that you're even giving him any credit at all, because the overall opinion, both of the audience at large that listens to the program here, but also myself included, is that you are a great critic and are very dissatisfied with his selection as the leader of the United States. I've very cautiously avoided the word free world. But let's talk about this. The positive remarks associated at Davos. Let's talk about that for a moment.
I try to report it as I see it.
Okay.
Well, and I try to report it honestly.
One would argue that at times your personal opinions slip in, but that's not here, there, there. Let's talk about the speech in Davos. What exactly was a positive to the speech in Davos?
Well, they liked the phrase, they didn't like the phrase America alone, but they did not, America first, but they did like the phrase America not alone. And they took a certain amount of heart from that. However, There were certain things in Davos which they didn't like, such as his references to fake news, which resulted in a few boos and hisses. Mm-hmm. A lot of people did not attend the speech in protest. Some people sat on their hands. Generally speaking, they were not. I mean, Davos is a forum for globalists. Uh-huh. And Trump's speech was not seen as a globalist speech.
Okay.
And that he's not a globalist, and he was a bit of a fish out of water there. However, they did take heart from one or two things and thought, well, maybe we can work with him, whereas before we thought there was no chance.
All right, let's take that and compare that to some of the remarks that you may have listened to early this morning for you. And of course, just to remind folks, our guest or our foreign editor, Tom Arms, is some 5 hours ahead of us. So as we were listening to the State of the Union speech last night at 9 o'clock U.S. or Eastern time, he was sound asleep 2 o'clock his time in London. But now, Tom, looking back at some of the remarks made last evening at the State of the Union address, what comparisons would you make, just out of curiosity? Obviously, you said Reuters had a very interesting comment. What did Reuters have to say about the State of the Union address?
Well, Reuters started its analysis with an excerpt from his speech. Mm-hmm. It was, when people are forgotten, the world becomes fractured. And then it added that many listening to the speech thought he was fracturer-in-chief.
Oh, my goodness. All right. So in reality, I find that a bit of a stretch on the point of Reuters, and that, of course, is an opinion. Let me give your opinion here, then, based on what you've heard of the speech last evening.
Well, I probably tend to agree with the Reuters speech a bit, but I thought it was very interesting how he kept saying over and over again, you know, I'm after unification, I want to end divisiveness and things like that. From a domestic point of view, he said a lot of the right things. He did hit a bit of a sour note with people who are in favor of immigration when he said that Americans are dreamers too, which implies that they have a right to dream more than other people.
No. I think
this is how it was interpreted. I'm not saying.
Okay.
This is how, I mean, this is how Radio 4's analysis was this morning on the Today program. They were quite skeptical. I think on foreign policy, that was where he hasn't changed much at all. There was concern expressed by Anthony Zucker, who's the BBC correspondent. There was concern expressed about the fact that he said that anyone who votes against who voted against America in the UN over the moving of the embassy to Jerusalem will find their aid being cut.
Mm-hmm.
And that we only help our friends.
Right.
That stuck a bit of a sour note with audiences elsewhere in the world. As you can imagine, they don't like the thought of what they regarded as sort of a blackmail.
Well, no, Wait. It's not a blackmail. It's just a matter of friends. Why is that an assumption of blackmail? It's a matter of we know who our friends are and we're going to look to our friends first. I think that's actually common sense. I'm intrigued that you use that term blackmail.
No, I'm reporting especially there's going to be a meeting this week of the Arab League. And that is a word which is already coming out of places like Jordan and Turkey.
Okay.
They don't like the idea of policies being imposed upon them. They want to be able to think for themselves.
Whoa. There's no policy being imposed upon them. This is folks that voted and in fact have quite frankly, shown that they have no interest in the U.S. Agenda. And there's just...
No, they have no interest. Wait a minute. They have no interest in a specific part of the U.S. agenda, which is the recognition of Jerusalem as the capital of Israel.
Which, by the way, let me just remind you, the United States has taken numerous votes on this in Congress in the past and have overwhelmingly seen votes of support. It's just that this is the first president to actually move on those votes. Very quickly, because we're going to go to a break, but this is not old news.
You said that before, and quite often Congress passes resolutions which are not are seem to be receptive to the popular vote, but not practical in application.
I
think this would be one of them.
No, you know what? Shouldn't have conducted the vote to begin with, if that is the case. All right, but as we prepare to wrap this up, and we're going to move on to other items in the United Kingdom and around the world, with Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms. Tom, I know it's a little premature, but overall, what do you think will be the reception of the State of the Union address in this evening's or tomorrow's news releases in the European community?
Much as what I've said, bit of an improvement.
Okay.
But they're holding fire. They want to say what he says on they want to see what he says on Twitter rather than on the teleprompter.
Okay, that's interesting. Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com, LookAhead Radio. And just a reminder, this portion has been pre-recorded here on Viewpoints.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment.
This is Tom Arms with the expanded Look Ahead World Analysis for the week beginning the 5th of February. Look Ahead broadcasts tomorrow's news today so that you can plan to participate. Another U.S. government shutdown looms. Next Thursday, Congress faces a new deadline to yet again try to pass a spending bill. Clashes over Dreamers and the wall threaten to bring the government to a halt again. Immigration will be a major topic for Secretary of State Rex Tillerson's Latin American tour to Mexico, Peru, Colombia, and Jamaica. Other topics are NAFTA, drugs, and the forthcoming Summit of the Americas. Mexico also holds trade talks with the EU on Monday. Recently, the Mexican Deputy Economy Minister said that there would be an EU-Mexico free trade agreement within weeks. Vice President Mike Pence is at the opening ceremony of the Winter Olympics on Friday before flying to Seoul and Tokyo to pledge unwavering American support against North Korea. North Korea is planning its own show of resolve with a military parade on Thursday to mark the anniversary of the creation of its army. Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe will also be at the Olympic opening ceremony before talks in Seoul about compensation for Korean sex slaves during World War II. South Korean President Moon says a 2015 agreement on the issue was flawed. U.S. diplomats will also use the Olympics as a forum to meet their Russian counterparts for talks on sanctions against North Korea. Putin says Russia has gone as far as it can on reducing oil exports. Russian President Putin gives his annual address to the Russian Parliament on Tuesday. Putin's main focus will be on future plans, that is, after he wins the March election. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau visits California and Chicago from Wednesday through to Saturday. The visit is designed to jumpstart the stalled NAFTA talks by stressing the strong ties between the U.S. and Canada. Turkish President Tayyip Recep Erdogan is in the Vatican on Monday. He wants to press Pope Francis to make a stand against President Trump's decision to move the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem. The Pope will doubtless use the occasion to press Erdogan to curtail his efforts to wipe out the Kurds in Syria and elsewhere. South Africa's Jacob Zuma may or may not give his State of the Nation address to Parliament on Thursday. Yet another attempt to impeach Zuma on corruption charges has been tabled in Parliament, and his opponents hope it will force his resignation before the annual address. Northern Ireland is also having a political change next week. On Saturday, after 30 years, Sinn Féin President Gerry Adams is resigning to be replaced by Mary Lou MacDonald. And that was next week's News Today so that you can plan to participate in the world around you. Stay tuned for Viewpoints Around the World with myself and Lockwood Phillips.
Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio joining us this evening. Yes, this portion of the program has been pre-recorded. Tom, we've chatted just a moment ago about the President's State of the Union address. I want to move to another situation, another leadership issue, and this having to do with Brexit. And I've noted a comment here from you, and it's going to be kind of related, but like to start with just the rising cost of Brexit, and then I want to talk about the political cost of Brexit. But let's talk about the rising cost of Brexit and how is that being pursued there, they're at home in the United Kingdom.
Well, some Treasury officials have done an impact assessment mm-hmm. of Brexit. And we were always told that they weren't doing this assessment. And the government denied that any assessment was ever taking place. But the assessment has been leaked to BuzzFeed.
Okay.
And it says that if Britain leaves the European Union without any agreement at all, in 15 years' time, the economy will be 8% smaller than what it is today. If it leaves with what's called a hard Brexit, it will be 5% smaller than what it is today. And if it leaves with a soft Brexit, it will be 2% smaller than what it is today.
What is
all
it?
The scenarios were that the economy will be smaller.
Okay. Let's define very quickly soft and hard Brexit very quickly, if you could.
Yeah, okay. A hard Brexit is when you leave what's called the customs union and the single market.
Mm-hmm.
And a soft Brexit is when you stay in those things.
Okay.
The single market requires you to accept European immigrants. It gives you access, tariff-free access to the all the Eurozone countries and so forth and so on.
But in the soft Brexit, would the UK still be subject to the European court?
Yes, and they'd still be subject to European courts. The only difference from what it is today is they would have no representation in Parliament or in the European Council.
All right. And then with that said, I find it fascinating that they feel that confident to look 8 years out. But here's the other question. What is the overall opinion now in the European community about Brexit? And what is the overall opinion in the United Kingdom about Brexit?
Well, in Britain, people are starting to shift more towards the anti-Brexit.
Okay.
The latest polls show 60 to 65% now want a second referendum on the issue. Whereas a year ago, it was only about 45%, 50 at tops. As a result, some of the European politicians are again raising the possibility, well, if you want to stay in, we're happy for you to stay in.
Okay, this leads to the other question that I wanted to talk about today. And I read with interest earlier this week that Prime Minister Theresa May is, for all intents and purposes, holding on barely with her leadership. What's the situation among her party?
It's, well, they're more or less fed up with her, but they can't get rid of her. If they get rid of her, they'll have to have an election.
Uh-huh.
Well, they won't have to have an election, but almost certain have to have an election because they don't have a majority in Parliament. And if there's an election, there's a very strong possibility that the Labour Party, led by far-left Jeremy Corbyn, will come to power. And they really don't want that. So although they don't like Mrs. May, they really can't very easily get rid of her.
Now, here's a question. Could she, in fact, take the hint and step aside and select her replacement? Or would it be a matter of her stepping aside and the party, the Conservative Party, if I'm understanding this correctly, will select her replacement? Or what's the process? Can it be done in a fashion to avoid an election?
Yes. The Conservative Party has to elect the leader.
Okay.
She can't choose it. She can recommend someone, but she can't choose them. What happened when David Cameron resigned was various people started to put their names forward. And I think they withdrew and she was left standing as really the only candidate. That is possible. But the problem with that is the DUP, the Democratic Unionist Party in Northern Ireland, because the Conservatives need their 10 votes, they have to approve whoever is elected leader of the Conservative Party.
Okay. And is there a possible individual, is there a bench? Shall we use that term here in the States? Is there a bench of candidates that could be easily?
There's a whole slew of possible candidates. There's the Chancellor who is, shall we say, soft Brexit.
Uh-huh.
And that's Philip Hammond. There's Boris Johnson, who's Foreign Secretary. He's very hard Brexit.
Okay.
There's Jacob Rees-Mogg, who's a backbencher, who would probably want to withdraw without a deal altogether. So there's a lot of people who would be willing to fill her shoes.
Okay.
There's Justine Greening, who was the education secretary. She is very soft Brexit. She left the government in protest.
Okay. So
not over Brexit, but because they wanted to shift it to another cabinet post.
All right. Here, quick question for you. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com, Look Ahead Radio, a topic we've been talking about now for a couple of years. It is interesting, Tom, that the prime minister is facing these challenges. Is it frustration within her party, or is it frustration within the country? And where do you feel this is going to iron out? Because in the process, this has everything to do with the European community and their preparation for their economic changes and challenges. And we've got to talk briefly about Germany. Does this influence any of the other countries?
I don't think it's directly influencing them now. They're letting Britain get on with things.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it does influence, you know, them. Some of the countries might think in terms of leaving the EU because of the British example. In terms of the party and things in Britain, the problem is that Mrs. May's party is totally divided on the issue of Brexit. And to be honest, so is the Labour Party.
Hmm.
Both the two main parties are divided on the issue of Brexit.
So if you have a referendum, would you anticipate that the vote would be in favor of remaining in the European Union?
I'm seriously worried if there would be a second referendum, because I think it would be in favor of remaining in the EU because people feel they've been sold a bill of goods at the moment. And if they do, then those people who in 2016 voted against the EU will be absolutely furious. And I think you could have demonstrations and all sorts of things.
All right. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio with us this evening. Tom, I want to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk about an item here that's kind of related to the European issue, Brexit issue, the European Union. And that is the Eurozone. And you make a note here, it's hitting a 10-year high. And I'm wondering, in relationship to the State of the Union address, if the fact that the President of the United States has taken great pride and credit for the changing economy, and I've been seeing some interesting stories about the world economy. We'll chat about that in just a moment here on Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. We now return to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio joining us this evening, early in the evening, as we are now talking to him, and it's almost 5 o'clock his time. As we air this program, it'll be almost 11 o'clock his time. So we're pre-recording this, as we usually do. Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Tom, you've got a note here, the Eurozone hits a 10-year high. We're looking at phenomenal stock market reportings here in the United States. I read a story recently that the world economy is showing great strength and, shall we say, resilience. What impact is this going to have on the political scene there, and particularly issues related to Germany, France, Norway, because there's still a lot of discomfort now with the European Union, led, of course, by the exit by the United Kingdom. What is the overall opinion about the economy worldwide?
Well, of course, as the Eurozone economies improve, then the dissatisfaction with the politicians decreases.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've got money in your pocket and you're happier. And, you know, the only really the only economy which isn't doing that well is the British. The Indians are expected to be 7.5%.
Mm-hmm.
The Chinese are not far behind them. I think what's America about 3.5.
Yeah,
3.5. Unemployment is down to 4.1, which is almost a full percentage point
mm-hmm.
below what's regarded as full employment. And so things look pretty well at the moment. The danger, of course, is it will overheat, and you have to look out for that sort of thing.
There's also a question. There's also a question related to the oil industry and some concerns associated with that, I guess predominantly as a result of dissatisfaction and challenges in the the OPEC. Are there difficulties there that you're hearing about? I've heard this just recently, as a matter of fact.
Well, you've heard more than I have. What have you heard?
I heard that there's question related to an energy shortage at some point. I find that interesting in light of the fact that last night the president noted that the U.S. has become a major energy exporter. So I just was wondering if maybe that had filtered out. I saw that one quick note. It may not be accurate, so I was just curious.
That would be good news, bad news, because a lot of the oil-producing countries could do with a bit of cash.
Right.
Certainly, all of them could, really. They're all hurting a bit. And it would help to stabilize those countries a bit better.
Right.
The U.S. has been an oil exporting country for about 4 or 5 years now, I think.
Yes, we have. I just wondered about that. Yeah. Back to the Eurozone very quickly, because I've got a variety of items to walk through here before we wrap things up. On the Eurozone, and of course, the association of Germany, France, Western European countries, are they looking at possibly having to shore up other countries, particularly Eastern Europe and maybe Spain, Greece, things of this nature? What's the feeling there?
Well, I think it's going to make it a lot easier to shore up Greece and to help it pull itself out of its recession.
Okay.
Spain and Italy as well. Some of the East European countries, such as Poland, are growing quite fast at the moment. Poland, I think, is growing at over 8% a year.
Seems to me that the world is improving.
It certainly does. As I said, the only one it isn't is the UK.
but the UK still has positive financial reports, does it not? I mean,
is at about 1.7%.
Yes, but
compared to the other countries, so relatively speaking, it's sliding down the scale.
That's okay, because as President Trump has promised, Great Britain will, the United Kingdom will have friends. Let's talk here, staying in the United Kingdom for a few more moments. Irish abortion. And this is interesting because in the United States, last weekend was our March for Life. Talk to me about this in a predominantly Catholic country.
Yes. Now, I put that in. I wanted to put that in because I wanted to correct an impression I made last week where I said that virtually all the EU countries now were accepting of abortion laws.
Okay.
And of abortion. Ireland is having a referendum on the issue in May.
Really?
The opinion polls show overwhelmingly at the moment, of course, that the vote will be in favor of abortion. At the moment, in both Northern and Southern Ireland, they only allow abortion if the mother's life is in danger.
Wow.
There are three other countries in the EU where that is the case, and they are Portugal, Spain, and Poland. They will allow abortions only if a mother's life is in danger. Malta does not allow any abortions for any reason whatsoever. All the other 23 members of the EU allow abortion on request.
Wow. All right. This said, no matter what length of time, what period of time?
I think it varies from country to country.
Okay. All right. We had an abortion vote in Congress just recently, and of course it was a vote to cease abortion after 20 weeks. It's basically the time frame in which it's identified that the baby could feel pain, but that's an interesting issue here in the States, and it was narrowly defeated, I might add. All right, I want to move on to other items, and this is kind of related to last night's remarks at the State of the Union address, and of course, the president did not hold back his opinion of North Korea, and I want to chat with you about that and also the North Korean problems with the Olympics. What's the feeling with North Korea? Is there a feeling that maybe we should attempt to, and again, not you, but I'm talking from the European community, that we need to continue to appease Kim Jong-un, or is there a feeling that maybe the there is a need for a firm resistance to the North Korean administration?
I don't think the word appease would be used.
Okay.
I think they would talk about contain.
Well, all right.
That there is a need to contain North Korea as much as possible.
All right. Then the next. And okay. I just was curious.
In much the same way that the Soviet Union was contained during the Cold War.
All right. Now let's move on, because I've got a variety of other. We got to talk about Turkey. That's a big story. What about the North Koreans and the Olympics?
Well, you know, the North Koreans are not exactly going completely cold on the idea, but they're you know, saying they don't want to do certain things, and they're talking about not having certain meetings with the South Koreans.
Mm-hmm.
And so, what does that mean? Well, I spoke to a few people, and basically, it's being interpreted as saber rattling on the part of Kim Jong-un. He's not very happy with President Moon's statement that Trump is responsible for North Korea's concessions over the Olympics.
Oh.
But he has more to lose than gain by not participating in the Olympics.
How so?
But he wants it to be known that he should not be taken for granted.
Okay, first question, very quickly. How does he have more to lose than to gain by not participating? What exactly does he have to lose?
Well, you know, even if he's a dictator, he has a domestic base, and they want to participate. The people want to be seen to be participating in the Olympics.
I find that fascinating that he's at all sympathetic or concerned about his image among the populace there in North Korea.
Well, dictators have to think of these things.
I find that. I'm very cynical about that remark. All right, let's look at the other aspect of this. There's talk that the North Koreans and South Koreans will march under a standard flag. What's the opinion of that?
That would be great.
But do you have faith in that? They are going to.
I have no idea. I'm not close enough.
Well, there's talk that they're going to march together, and as one Korea. I find that interesting as well. All right, let's move on to Turkey and the attack on the Kurds, and of course that have also involved the United States as well. What's the situation there in the Middle East?
Well, the situation is that the Turks are moving forward. They're moving against the Kurds. Anyone who speaks out against the invasion of northern Syria is being arrested. So far, they've arrested 300 people in Turkey for speaking out against the invasion. Having said that, it does appear to have widespread popular support within Turkey among Erdogan's supporters. They think he's doing a good job.
Well, of course they do, because they'll be arrested if they don't. I mean,
true.
Here's the interesting thing. And Tom, I find this fascinating about Turkey and, of course, the relationship with Russia, the hot and cold approach that we here in the States see with Europe. You know, here we've got a very strong dictator, for all intents and purposes, in Turkey, who the folks in Europe have been trying to be nice with, because they would like him possibly to be more of a buffer between, well, Western Europe and Russia, and also Iran, Syria, as being, if you will, their, I'll use the word buffer. I'm fascinated. What is the future of the relationship with Turkey? Will it be ever admitted to the European Union? And keep in mind, it's a member of NATO. I just find this interesting.
It's been a member of NATO almost from the start. Will it ever be admitted to the European Union? Not in the foreseeable future.
Okay.
Certainly not while Erdogan is the president. It doesn't even come close to fulfilling the what's required of it to be a member of the European Union. You called Erdogan a dictator. I would agree with that, but you have to also say that he is an elected dictator.
Well, okay. Managed election. We'll move on to
managed democracy, it's called.
Okay, managed democracy. Interesting observation on that one. You're listening.
I think Turkey will, at the very best, take a much more independent line in its foreign policy.
Okay.
And at the very worst, ally itself more closely with Russia and China.
And, of course, interestingly enough, you've got there's some conflicts there with Iran, Iraq, and Syria. All right, we're chatting with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. We'll be back right after this message. I want to wrap up on a few interesting items here. Stay with us here on Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment.
Observations of an Expat by Tom Arms from LookAheadNews.com. It's time to talk. Nuclear weapons, cyber weapons, drones, robots, and rogue nuclear states have combined to move the doomsday clock to 2 minutes before midnight. The last time it was this close to Armageddon was January 1953. Stalin was still in the Kremlin. The Korean War was raging, and General MacArthur was pressing for a nuclear attack on China. The Soviets detonated their first atomic bomb in 1949. The Americans exploded their first hydrogen bomb in 1952. Anti-communist witch hunter Senator Joe McCarthy was at the height of his power. Post-war Western Europe was struggling to rise to its knees, and the Soviet thumb was busily screwing down Eastern Europe. The international situation was bad. In 2018, say the committee that moves the hands of the doomsday clock, it is as bad as the worst it has ever been. And yet, despite the fear that is creeping into global diplomatic relations, very little is being done to encourage negotiations designed to push the minute hand away from midnight. We've become so obsessed with issues such as immigration, sovereignty, and economic growth that we've lost sight of the dangers that threaten to obliterate any political and economic gains. The dangers are as great now as in 1953 because the weaponry is more frightening and the threats are politically more complex and multipolar. In 1953, it was Moscow versus Washington. In 2018, it is Washington versus Beijing, Moscow versus Washington, Washington versus Tehran, China versus India, Israel versus Iran, and the Arab world. North Korea versus Washington, Pakistan versus India, Russia versus the EU. Kegs of nuclear gunpowder are scattered across the globe and just waiting for the spark to blow us all to kingdom come. There are now three main protagonists instead of two. In 1953, Mao's China was closed in on itself. Now it is demanding its rightful place in the world, especially in the Western Pacific. In doing so, it is coming up against American power that has filled the vacuum since 1945. Russia, on the other hand, is trying to recover the superpower status that it lost at the end of the Cold War. At the moment, the United States has an overwhelming military and technological advantage. But both China and Russia are determined to pursue what they regard as their legitimate interests and are unwilling to accept American military dominance. The U.S., for its part, especially under Donald Trump, is unwilling to make any concessions. So, China and Russia are spending billions to modernize and expand nuclear and conventional arsenals to catch up with the United States. Trump is doing the same in order to stay ahead. And the smaller countries will be forced to modernize if only to remain relevant. The Chinese and the Russians are not waiting to catch up with America before testing its power. They've developed what analysts call hybrid warfare, designed to keep the U.S. preoccupied and off guard. These include things such as computer hacking, cyber warfare, political and economic intelligence, disinformation, economic warfare, criminal activities, and political manipulation. They combine these with what is called gray area warfare, such as Russian activities in Ukraine and Syria, and the Chinese in the South China Sea. Gray area warfare involves probing attacks, usually in such a way that a plausible deniability is available in order to plant the seeds of doubt among Western public opinion. America's primary response has been to invest more in technology. one of the most frightening results is a supersonic, pinpoint-accurate conventional weapon designed to knock out nuclear weapons before they can be launched. This missile is believed to be near deployment. The Russians and the Chinese are frightened of it because it will give the US a first-strike nuclear capability. So they are developing their own such weapons. Then there are the drones and the killer robots and artificial intelligence. All these are either already deployed or in the process of development. A new arms race is on. Because of shifting geopolitics and advancing technology, it is much more frightening than in the Cold War years. The need for diplomatic negotiations is correspondingly greater.
Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Tom, before we get to the, shall we say, the climax of the day, an interesting story about yodeling. But before we do that, two quick questions for you. One having to do with Colombia suspending talks with the ELN rebels. And of course, Colombia has been in a civil war now for going on 15 years, it seems like. What impact will this have on the Colombian community and the rest of South America?
Well, it's very interesting. Everyone thought a year or so ago that everything was going to be hunky-dory because they signed a peace agreement with FARC, which was the biggest rebel group by far.
Right.
There's another tiny group called the ELN, which has its roots in Christian liberal theology. And since FARC has rejoined the political mainstream, the ELN has increased in size because of all the people who were in FARC who didn't want to be part of an agreement with the government.
So what's the future? Is this going to be a growing problem for Colombia?
It will be a particularly growing problem. Yeah, as you know, I was in Colombia earlier this year, and I was talking about the ELN to the defense minister. He said the problem with the ELN, he predicted that at that point talks were about to start, and he predicted they'd break down because they run on a cell structure.
Right.
They don't have a central command which they can negotiate with.
Right. So that it would be difficult to actually conduct a comprehensive negotiation. Final question before I move on to Argentina very quickly. Is there a possibility, because Colombia has been engaged in civil war now, am I correct, about 15 years, maybe longer?
Longer.
Okay. What's the feeling? Is this
since the 80s?
Yeah. Well, now we're going on 30 years. All right. It's a conundrum. Will a change in government in Colombia help in any way?
No, there's going to be elections in May.
Okay. And
the issue of negotiations is high on the agenda.
All right. Speaking of Colombia, Argentina, quick note, banning nepotism?
Yeah. Now, you know why I put that in? I mean, if you look at Argentina, it really has had a problem with nepotism. You know, there was Juan Perón and his wife Eva and... then his second wife, Isabel, and then there was the Kirchners, Nestor, and what have you. You know, it seems if you want to become, if you're a woman, you want to become president of Argentina, you have to marry the president.
Right. So they're eliminating that. They're banning that. Will not allow that that succession within the family.
They not just for president, but, you know, cabinet ministers have been told to sack their sons and daughters and and wives from the offices that they've been given. And so it's an end of nepotism.
Interesting.
In Argentina.
Interesting. As you pointed out, it's been an ongoing issue there. Let's finish up with...
I think it has been elsewhere as well, Lockwood, and that's why I wanted to point it out. I mean, you have the same problem in almost all the democracies these days, and I think it's one that should be dealt with.
Very interesting. All right, let's move on because I want to wrap it up with this very interesting story. A degree in yodeling.
Lucerne University in Switzerland is giving a degree in yodeling. Now, I have a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Old lady.
Old lady. Okay, got you.
Old lady.
My question is, how many years of practice does it take to get the degree?
Oh, 3 years.
Really? This is...
Well, not practice, but you have to study it. And, I suppose, the history of yodeling and the cultural aspects of yodeling and what clothes you have to wear while yodeling.
I'll tell you
how big of alpine horn you have to hold while yodeling.
Wait,
carve the horn, all those sort of things.
No, in country and Western music, we yodel as well. So I find that interesting. We have to send some folks over from country Western community here in the States to Lucerne University in Switzerland. As always, Tom, it's a pleasure to wrap it up with you at this point because it's something that puts a smile on our face. Thank you for being with us this evening.
Thank you, Lockwood.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms here on lookaheadnews.com and also, of course, with Look Ahead Radio, Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio is a production of The Talk Station.